Here at Physio Matters, we think physio matters. Become a member today and access over 500 webinars. Get free tickets to shows and access new content instantly. Access at home, work, or on the train to make sure your CPD is on track. Physio-matters.com. More content than the all-you-can-eat buffet cart.
Adam Dobson, welcome back to Chewing It Over. How do we solve low back pain?
Good question, Jack. So I think a big part of the problem is having high quality standards, information, education, kind of at the front of, let's say, the NHS doorstep. So the lack of the variation issue in terms of care, in terms of the communication, the messages that we provide to patients, the misinformation that patients get. I think there needs to be an attempt to standardize quality information that we're all using pretty much standardly in primary care, in secondary care, that is consistent with the NICE guidelines, that's consistent with best information, that's sensible, that's not silly, and that is empowering patients to make their own changes.
Why do you think that matters? Why? Because some people clearly aren't as passionate about this as you and I, and seem to be thinking, well, let's let a thousand flowers bloom. Just, you know, what's it matter about consistency? Like, why do you think that really matters on clinically?
So I run a residential program, as you know, Jack, in rehabilitation for back pain. And the consistent thing we get from patients on a regular basis is that there's too much information. It's contradictory and it leads to confusion, frustration, potentially lost time on treatments that may have little value. So this kind of idea that we have our house in order from a patient perspective, it's just an absolute myth. And it leads to just wasted time, confusion, anger. A lot of patients I see are just really angry, frustrated. Once they kind of know the truth and they kind of they start to think a bit more critically when they use healthcare information, if it be on the high street or in the NHS or whatever. So I think we can do better in just preventing that, basically, to allowing for a smoother move through the healthcare system, so that they're getting good information, sensible information, and we're not having to kind of firefight all of these contradictory pseudo-scientific ideas or looking for solutions where the solution may not be.
And how complicit do you think the NHS has been in that? Because I think one of the things that surprises a lot of people, especially outside of the system, is how disparate different teams, trusts, organisations can be, including with their information.
I mean, you only have to look at the NHS website, Jack, to know that we're a way off in terms of contemporary information. Look at the NHS website on posture, for instance. Very dated, very antiquated, quite nocebic. So from the top down, there seems to be a kind of political there isn't much kind of will to kind of want to change these from the top down. So we've had to work it from the bottom up. But certainly, if you look at the NICE guidelines, if you look at the National Back Pain Pathway, for me, it seems very simple what we should be doing. It seems very simple what we should be not doing and not seeing, and the options we should be giving patients and how we conceptualize how we can help. But even within the NHS, you've got variation. You've got people doing acupuncture, and you've got different messages and people not being aware of the guidelines. So I think that physiotherapists, they notoriously don't follow guidelines. So I think even in the NHS, it whilst it would appear to be simple, it isn't.
And so what did you, because most people have been irritated by this stuff for a long time. I've had my versions on the broader MSK space as to how I've gone about trying to solve some of that. Some have succeeded, some have been challenged. But you're really creating specialized resources, particularly for the back pain question. So I always end up going too broad and end up naturally finding that having its own challenges for the general. So how have you gone about taking steps forward? And why is it, do you think, that you, unlike everyone else, actually then get on and crack on and don't worry about some of the hurdles?
Yeah, so I everything that I've done for, if it be for the NHS or in the betterment of back pain, it's kind of come out of a personal frustration on the front line. So, I'm seeing patients with persistent back pain on a regular basis, and I'm kind of like, I need good information to my patients. Does it exist? And if it doesn't exist, then I'm essentially, some time ago, kind of decided that I want to create that information myself or source it from somewhere else. So that it started with the 10 back facts, the Peter O'Sullivan. I think there was a paper that was related to the 10 back facts. So initially, I kind of copied and pasted that onto a Word document, and it was just a grainy Word document, and I was kind of printing it off, and like you're just kind of giving this like second rate information on printed paper. And then I thought, you know what, let's see if we can emulate this and reference the sources and kind of elevate the content. So I went to the comms team. We didn't even have the website at this point, Jack. And went the comms team, they put together, and it was just fantastic. I was just like, the graphics and the information, I was like, this is like amazing. And I think, like most people, when you see good work, it just resonates with you, doesn't it? Like, we all have the same problems, we all have the same frustrations when you work in chronic pain or you work in musculoskeletal practice. So I kind of put it onto Twitter, and it was like, it just resonated, and everyone wanted to use it and change the logo. And it was like this big wave of good information getting out there. So I then did a sciatica facts one. I did a stenosis one, and they were received very well. I think because they have an NHS logo on the information, that kind of gives it a bit of validity. And
just that, is that a challenge to actually do that? Because I know I've had experience in the past whereby that almost becomes a stumbling block because of the layers of which it needs to go sometimes through checking. So did you ask for forgiveness, not permission, or what did you go with?
That would be it, yeah. So we
I thought so.
We didn't ask any questions. We didn't ask for permission. I think that, like me and a couple of colleagues, we work in the low back pain spinal team. So there really isn't anyone above clinically kind of taking on that advocate role. So we were just like, we know this is good information. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. We know there is a need to provide better information. So we just ran with it. We actually just spoke to the comms team and said, we want to do this. Can you create it? And they just did it.
Oh, lovely, lovely cat. I bet he's cold. Yeah. Well, something I haven't told the listeners and viewers yet is that if you're watching on video, you'll see Adam's draped in a scarf cum blanket because his boiler's not working and his poor shivering cat's just wandered past us. But yeah, look, we shall work on. Yeah. I thought you might have done that and just got on with it. But have you had any of the bureaucratic challenges or any sort of niggles there for where in an ideal world you'd be able to just crack on and do XYZ and it's either slowed you down or stopped you?
Well, we were at a time when the comms team were kind of going through a transition. So very early on, there was less kind of bureaucratic kind of restrictions on this stuff. They essentially like, are you an expert in this area? And we got to know the comms team really well, and we were like, we praising them, and they were a part of the team, and we got on with the website team, so I kind of have a good relationship with them now. But since then, the comms team's kind of overhauled the process where you have to go through all of these steps that it needs to be vetted, and it needs to go through various levels for to check the quality, and then they come back to you. You can't just give your own information out in the clinic anymore. But all we've done is retroactively move that content onto their system. So, but we haven't changed it in any way. If anything, it's become more integrated once we've got the website in place. But we didn't ask too many questions. Is the answer? I'm thinking someone might come after me now. I've said that, Jack. But
don't worry. No one listens. Only a few tens of thousands. But what was the? Is it a logical next step then to try and build that out into a network of resources that became a website, that became Backtracks? Talk us through those because I like how emergent it is, you know, from projects we've worked on before. It's like you and I, you remember that first Big Arts conference? No one would have known that we were going to be able to manage to pull that thread and create MSKR. And obviously, you know, we know that the best things are emergent because of the momentum. And I feel like I've watched that happen with you.
Yeah, so they went from kind of handouts to then they become digital resources and then they become PDF resources. Now they are accessible, friendly, integrated into the website. So we had a very basic website. I have to say that's not correct that we didn't have a website, but it was very much kind of these are your clinical details, the phone number and where the clinics ran and things. But we just used the website as a platform to start developing some of these ideas. So it went well with the patient information. And then we got in contact with a private marketing company, a digital marketing company who were working with the trust. They said, look, we'd love to do some work with you through the comms team. So they kind of took over the role of the comms team from an artistic perspective. Mm-hmm. And then I just had these kind of projects in mind. And the next project, this was 3 years ago, Jack, by the way, when it wow. comes to Backtracks that I first started to think about it. And I was like, I want something. So first of all, there was a video with Adam Meekins where he was, when he had his sciatica and he was doing them stretches on Instagram and he had the music over the top. And I thought, I love the no audio, just very simple, follow along, kind of novel exercises, like, you know, kind of making up on the spot almost. Mm-hmm. So I saw that, and then I had a couple of videos from Mehmet. Is it the hip guy?
Hip, yeah.
And he sent me a couple of videos using like the CFT approach. And I was like, there's nothing that emulates this in terms of what we currently have. I'm teaching. So I very much are a CFT proponent, Jack. There's my kind of bias, mm-hmm. Which is very much about kind of trying to exposure therapy, trying to work on relaxed bending and reducing overprotectiveness and developing it into their cognitive strategies. But there was nothing like that. I was doing it in the clinic with patients, but there was no resources that anyway kind of replicated any of that stuff. And I was like, you know, patients going, I want something written down. And I was just kind of thinking, I saw these other resources. Can we kind of develop this? It was initially, can we draw them?
Yeah, of course. They always want a stick man, don't they?
Yeah. Can we draw them? Can they be like a booklet in the same way as the other documents? But then this marketing team were like, you know what? Why don't we record them? And that kind of started the prototype of the project Backtracks.
Brilliant. Now, give me an insight. Obviously, you should, and I hope, be proud of what it is as it currently is. But what have you been frustrated at the time frame? Has it moved slower than you'd like it to? What might be, you know, if so, what might be mitigating strategies for if people? Because I think that's one of the things I've witnessed before is people almost burning out a little bit and just not being able to see it all the way home. But you have.
I think it's because it was an emergent idea. Things were kind of getting worked out as we were working on them. That meant that certain things we kind of had to go back to the drawing board with and then recreate again. So the initial prototype, which is a video prototype, was restrictive, and the team that we were working with essentially didn't have the digital acumen to take it to the level that we ultimately wanted it to be at. So we wanted it to kind of become more professional, become more kind of intuitive, and those kind of tech savvy issues I just didn't have. So we ended up having to take it to another company who actually build the NHS website, Jack.
Right.
So called Mixed. So they actually build the NHS websites currently. And so they took my prototype, and then we built that from the ground up again into the current NHS website. So and that was like already 2 years in. So we videoed the video recordings within a month of the idea, but it took 2 years before we started integrating into the main site.
And what do you think to that? Because that's the sort of thing that our kind of one of the spoiler alert here, but the conclusion to this conversation is that we want to try and inspire other people to be innovators and intrapreneurs, as they call it within the NHS, right? But you and I both know that so many might start with some enthusiasm, but to hear that timeline can be frustrating, because there'll no doubt been parts in that where it needn't have been as steady. And I know you enough to know that it weren't you that they were waiting on, you know. So talk me through how you felt about that and what mitigating factors we could put in place to try and stop that always happening.
Well, it was frustrating, very frustrating. I never really wanted to give up on it, though, because I'd bigged it up too much.
Yeah, you knew I'd still had you on the podcast now and said, where is it? Yeah,
you know, like you said you were doing this. And I'm always going to need it as well. I'm always going to need something like that. So the necessity was always there. So if I didn't create this, like I was like, how else are we going to bridge that barrier instead of using some stuffy images or sheets on handouts? And there's so much applicability to it in terms of the physio team using it, patients using it on their own, us using it in the clinic, and all the kind of additional resources. So I am in a position where I've got freedom to work on these things, and I'm not being micromanaged by any other people. So I guess that would be a limitation. And also I have a great department. We ended up having to invest a lot more money into it at the back end. So you need the support of your peers. You know, it can't just be an enthusiasm only.
And how, just on that, with regards to funding and stuff, how was it that the obvious logic about the fact that this will create natural efficiencies downstream is going to pay for itself? Was that just an easy argument to make with
it,
these?
It wasn't. No, it wasn't an easy argument to make at all. From a clinical perspective, it was. But my manager's sufficiently far away from me clinically.
Yeah, yeah.
Would perhaps struggle to understand the vision or the need. So we had to make a big case for that. But after I'd sent sufficient emails in their direction, they were like, "Oh, look, let's see if we can work this out." But I do feel that the lack of planning and, you know, this would have took half the time in retrospect if I was to do that again. So I do feel the planning at the front end could have been better, because this vision was kind of unrolling as I was going. But if I was to do it again, it would have took half the time.
Because I think one of the things that I look on at with things like this is it's so important and so valuable and so useful for when it is within the NHS. I want to come to, annoyingly, why it's so decentralized sometimes, this, why that wouldn't be this central to an NHS the NHS website, not just your trust's NHS website or your team's NHS website. It's kind of a frustration that I will come back to. But one thing I wanted to just ask is, as Physio Matters, you know, and, you know, it's wider associated projects, like you've worked with Rheumatology Physio and things like that on booklets and resources, right? So essentially what we're talking about is content creation. We are the example of a very small and very, therefore, agile organization and company and projects. And then you've got the NHS is one of the largest employers of people in the world and all of its complexity that comes with that. And therefore, it is fundamentally corporate. There is an acceptance. It'd be so naive for anyone to think that something like this could move as quickly in the NHS, in any NHS service, as safe as your matters would, and that the incentives might be in different orders. However, it probably shouldn't be as wide a gap as it is. Is that fair to say? So yeah. What do you think is a reasonable grading as to how we can try and get, is that a sensible aspiration, and how close to an agile private business can the NHS be on something like this? And if it can't improve that, my next question would be, if it can't improve in that direction sufficiently, are we destined for misinformation to be pervasive? Because fundamentally, things do move on, things do move forward, and so it's never going to catch up.
So a lot of questions there, Jack. I think that goodwill and good information permeates. There's so many good clinicians that we've encountered through social media who this resonates with. So there is a will from the clinicians on the ground, I feel, because this is being took up by several other NHS trusts. That's the first thing I would say. Sure. So from a clinical perspective, there is a will. I would also say that I think that locally to us in local trusts and things, there perhaps it is some movement in the terms that there may be some, I can't say this is definitely going to happen, but there may be some standardization from our website to neighboring websites. So in terms of the information that we're getting out, 10 back facts, posture, la-di-da-di-da, let's not reinvent the wheel. Can we permeate this out from a grassroots to neighboring trusts? And that would be, you know, kind of Sunderland, Newcastle, Cumbria, that kind of thing. Now, I think if that happens, there would perhaps be a kind of like a threshold by which that would then permeate wider. And my hope is that would be the case, that there will be a threshold and then there'll be a top-down kind of recognition of that and that it might permeate out. In terms of the top-down, the governance and the NHS England, I really don't know how that works because I've not been able to break into that conversation and have discussions with people who decide upon those things. Not for a will of trying on Twitter. I'm often putting NHS England, what do you think about this? Why don't you put that on your website and things like that? But I'm not sure. I wonder if that may not even be a clinical team. That may be a kind of governing kind of management type individuals who are deciding that. But there doesn't seem like there is an appetite from the top down to make that happen. I'm not quite sure why that is. Jack, can you tell me?
Suppose it's that's an area and a layer I'm much more au fait with. But unfortunately, the more you understand it, you'd think that therefore you'd end up with more sympathies and understanding in their direction, more empathy. But I don't. I find them wanting. The more attention I pay in that direction, is that I think that they are not just clinically distant, but I think that the leadership there doesn't really comprehend NHS and pain related practice. MSK and pain related practice. So it's just in that they can't really understand what the need will be, and then you end up in a situation where there's just a hyper caution on the leadership level, where they just end up being that innovation is actually nothing but awkward to them. I suppose I'm just always thinking about the fact that taxpayer funds, in part through various different things, has managed to fund these resources as well as then paying your salary. I can't believe the failure to leverage not just your skill set, but also the fruits of your labor and your team's labor, as well as then we could extend that as being best practice, right? When there are examples of best practice, it drives me crazy that they can't proliferate and be used as templates, as blueprints, etc. And it really throws back to, I mean, it's, you know, our fellow traveler in this language, Paula Deakin, and my work with IPOPS at the time, and all the things that no doubt are going on all over the country, that really struggle to correlate, or the fact that there's often wastage. You know, for all we know, there might be someone down in Devon doing exactly what you're doing with like, you know, it's almost like the, you know, the thousands of millions of monkeys typing on typewriters thing, where they say that eventually everything happens elsewhere, just a slightly different thing. I think that we could end up in a situation where, imagine something that is incredibly similar, not a hair's breadth difference really to yours, that is being duplicated right now because we've not been able to appropriately, like, just do basic PR and marketing on the NHS.
Yeah, the devolution of the NHS and into their various separate businesses clearly has its downsides. But I mean, we run a residential program, which is a big investment of time and money and resources. And this is what we're teaching on that program. So, you know, so I don't know why that can't be replicated wholesale. You know, I feel for me though, things are simple, and I you know, like you say, I'm not risk averse. I just know that this is good information, and it's evidence based, and it's contemporary, and it's not controversial information to say that slouching is perfectly okay to do. I don't see that as a controversial concept. So I have no problem with endorsing that and getting that out. And I'm an NHS, work for the NHS. So on some level, the NHS is endorsing it, aren't they? If on some level.
But they're not challenging it directly. And I think one of the things is that you're not averse. I know you are not averse to challenge anyway. It's not as if that you're saying this is the word of the Lord and you're therefore failing to have it challenged or being willing to have it poked at. I think, do you have any sort of top tips for said NHS entrepreneurs that are willing to lend their creativity into the system? How do you sort of give them the pep talk that they might need to keep on keeping on?
I think you are the king of this, Jack, but it's networking.
don't put that on me. I've never networked a day in my life. Get lost.
Yeah, you have. You do. You're very good at making friends with people. So it's kind of knowing who's in your bubble. So these people, there's a number of people within the communications team, the wider marketing team, that if I didn't ask questions, if I didn't probe, if I didn't shake hands with people and email people and kind of say, what do you do? And we're looking to do this, and can we do this? And if I didn't do that, I wouldn't have encountered these individuals of amazing skills and amazing knowledge that you just don't have. So with the building of the website, you know, I've got this general concept that I want, and I'm like, this is what I want here. And I'm going, can you do this? And they are, we can do that, but actually I think we can make this better. So I'm like utilizing their skills and making my product better. So yeah, networking, getting to know people, and, you know, just, yeah, get your ideas out there. I know it's very cheesy to say that, isn't it? That's like the most fluffiest thing to say. Get your ideas out, you know, talk to people. But that's been the main thing, is my the amount of people that I know in the trust now from various kind of disciplines is increased.
Do you think that by disposition you are someone that getting them out there and being willing to be shot at and stuff. There's something to that though, isn't there? Really, that's relevant.
Yeah. So since I joined Twitter, really, and seeing the good that goes on and the injustice of when good stuff doesn't get to good people, I guess, and hearing the stories and seeing the grifters and seeing the misinformation, it's kind of stirred up a kind of a wanting in me to do better, but also to uplift my practice and to uplift people's practice who neighboring to me. Every day we're just trying to make it a little bit easier to get good information to get that kind of rounded information to patients to make the to make it more enjoyable, and to feel that the getting that evidence into practice is actually working. Because I don't really, I care about the front line. I care about things that concern me and people like me, which is thousands of healthcare professionals, thousands of musculoskeletal professions who feel burnt out, who feel disillusioned, who leave the profession. I could easily be one of those people, because I equally leave work feeling despaired sometimes. So everything that I'm doing is trying to make that easy and trying to bring that evidence into the front line. And that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I think I'm so glad you're doing it, and it's so important. I think it's interesting, and it takes people like yourself to really go for it. I've said it a number of times, but it's worth probably repeating here, that I think the MSK pain and injury space, it's such an easy job to do badly and a difficult job to do well, that that gap is really relevant. Because the fact that it's easy to do badly means that then complacency kills, and that is really tricky. Whereas there are other things that almost the fact that if you're doing it badly, you know, it's like a bad general medical bad renal surgeon, someone's doing bad endoscopies, you can get found out easier. Whereas bad MSK, you know, just going through the motions isn't life-changing in that moment. It therefore can hide, and it's really quite a burden on the system. But it's also not something that shows itself that easily. It's easy to do, and it's not always malicious either, you know. People, you know, not knowingly doing wrong, doing ill. So therefore, championing best practice and having that bit between your teeth that you have, and to make sure that we continue, no matter how long it takes for us to do the right thing ethically by the people that are vulnerable that we serve, is so important. So the ability for us to signpost to resources that are quality, that are credible, that hopefully can proliferate and create a template for others to do that, that might be more relevant to their locality. You know, there could be some context specific stuff that then might be smart for different teams and trusts and services to do, but having a base and a reference point is so important. And it takes someone like yourself to be that prime mover. And so whilst, you know, we're all part of a community of practice on this, it's still, you know, I know that you are that guy, because you won't settle, and you encounter that misinformation and its consequences most days. Yeah,
it's not abstract to me. It's not a conversation on Twitter.
It's not a theory.
It's every day in front of me, and all of this baggage that our patients have to contend with. I would also say as well, with the wider kind of concept that it's developed, we've got the booklets, we've got the educational resources kind of complementing the messages that you're giving your patients in the clinic. We've also got pull-ups and posters and all these kind of things in the clinics that we use. So we're kind of like, we're kind of priming patients for certain messages, perhaps. And then we've got the backtracks, which is kind of maybe contributing to advice and education, or maybe rehabilitation, which then feels into our many kind of downstream referral routes that we've got, physiotherapy, back to health program, etc. What I'm looking to develop as well is a rehabilitation booklet that is a kind of like a navigation document that then refers to the various other resources. What I tend to feel is that when it comes to things like exercise, unless you have that kind of overpinning kind of framework of why exercise may matter to them in terms of what our goals are, like what it's actually doing, perhaps what we're looking toward, I feel that without that kind of broader framework for that to sit into, it's... the exercises lose legitimacy, don't they? They kind of, they're blowing in the wind, and we don't know what they mean or what they're for. I was told to do these things. I don't know why I was doing them. So what I'm trying to do is kind of give some shape to the types of interventions, education, exercise, whatever it might be, and then some direction to some information, and then some direction to some of the things you might be doing differently using backtracks. So using the navigation document, the rehabilitation booklet, as a kind of a guide to all those things. So it does a bit of the heavy lifting that you often want to do in the clinic but can't. Or it might complement your discussions in the clinic. And it gives it a like this looks like a real thing that people have thought about. And it's about managing my flare-ups and it's about getting me back to gardening. And because I feel that we don't have that kind of conceptual idea very well thought of at the beginning.
The concept of breaking something down and then exposing people to the functional tasks of which are meaningful for them is something that I think definitely gets underestimated as to why people might engage with exercise. It's just like, because exercise can be part of the problem if it's just like, oh, well, you're weak, that you know that to be suggested that you need to get stronger therefore implies that that weakness is relevant to their pain, which might then lead to them have a sense of fragility of a different persuasion. And that I think physiotherapists are guilty of doing that with regards to strength, when we would be critical of an osteopath suggesting it's a twisted pelvis or a chiropractor implying that they're correcting someone's subluxations. But physio have got their own nocebic versions of those things if they're clumsy in how they deliver them. So nesting it within a context of functional exposure is the sort of thing that can weave that together. You and I are forever riffing on the examples of that working. It's not a theory, it's a practice. It's an implemented embodied practice that we're doing with individuals, with groups, and as you know from some of my more recent work, is trying to get that in the community, and doing that as much as you can, as accessibly as you can. And so it's exciting to see where you go further with it. Where do people find out more about it and about you, for this?
So the South Tees website, just put South Tees NHS into Google, and you'll find the back pain website that
We
way.
need to get you a URL. That's the next step, really. If the bureaucracy allows it, really, it'd be great to have backtracks.co.uk or equivalent, wouldn't it? But
That would be currently it's services slash forward slash
South T
backtrack.
slash slash I know. But we'll put it together. Maybe we'll put it on a QR code. That's always a good hack. But
Well, we've
we'll
got
make sure
QR
we
codes.
link it. We'll link that. We'll link it as thoroughly as we can. And you personally?
Well, just say we've got a QR code for the website. I'll put it on Twitter,
Oh,
Jack,
good.
if you want to do it.
Do. Yeah, we'll use that.
At Adam Dobson 123 is my Twitter. What's it? Twitter handle? Twitter handle?
Yes.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
I'm pretty
And
prolific.
so to my first question again then. So we haven't quite solved low back pain, but we're moving the needle in the right
No,
direction. Yeah.
no. We may never solve back pain, Jack, but we can make it more simple. We can make it less confusing. We can get rid of the chaff, and combining things like preventing over medicalization, standardizing our information. I think there are a lot more people that we would help than that we don't currently help.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that is the thing, is just keep chipping away at it one step at a time. But it's an absolute pleasure catching up with you as ever, mate. And thank you for all that you
Yeah.
do for all of us, and particularly for the NHS.
Thank you very much. See you on the other side.
Yes, mate.
You fed up with printing out exercise programs, or horror, drawing them? Solve every exercise prescription issue you can think of using Rehab My Patient. Thousands of pictures, videos of every movement you can dream up. Send by email or WhatsApp, translate into different languages at the click of a button. But don't take our word for it. Sign up for a 3-month free trial now. Just go to rehabmypatient.com/physiomatters.